Last weekend, I was at two different races during the weekend. On Friday, I took the kids. We went for the first time, actually, to the Toledo Speedway. We hear the races every week from our house, but this was our first time actually going to the track. And we went and watched sprint car races, and it was a lot of fun. I have picture up here, proof that we went. It was a good time for all. Then Saturday morning, I participated in the Muddy Mini Half Marathon, which started in downtown Maumee and went through Sidecut and then all finished on the warning track at Fifth Third Field at the Mud Hens Ballpark downtown. And I was thinking about these two races and what a different experience it is for the race car driver as opposed to the marathon runner. Now I can only imagine what it's like for race car drivers, what their experience is of those races, just from driving a car at not quite 150 miles an hour. But I imagine as they go around that track, they don't really see the crowd, right? The crowd cheering them on, they can't hear them, and it's pretty much a blur, I would guess, as they go around that track. But as a runner, I was able to really experience what that was like. And going at a bit different pace, I assure you, I was not going too fast where that everyone on the side of the road was a blur. I was able to look in the eyes of the kids who were spraying everyone with squirt guns running by, and just the delight in their eyes, knowing that they could just, spray water at strangers without getting into trouble, was just a glorious thing. I could look at the people who were handing me water, and to see the faces of the officers who were managing traffic and just say thank you to them for sacrificing their time so that we could enjoy this race. Totally different experience, being able to look in the eyes of people versus seeing them as a blur. And I think that these two images are kind of a metaphor for two different ways that we can live our lives. We can go through life and everything is a blur because we're just trying to fly by and survive, not run into the next wall, around the next corner. Or we can go a little bit more slowly and look into each other's eyes to walk the earth and experience life in a more intimate way. This week, as we continue to move through Barbara Brown Taylor's book, An Altar in the World, Barbara Brown Taylor examines the reality that Jesus' ministry was done at a walking pace. She writes, Jesus walked a lot, and not only during the last week of his life. The four Gospels are peppered with accounts of him walking into the countryside, walking by the Sea of Galilee, walking in the temple, and even walking on water. If Jesus had driven a car instead, it is difficult to imagine how that might have changed his impact. Surely someone could have loaned him a fast horse. Instead, he walked everywhere he went, except for a short stint on a donkey at the end. This gave him time to see things like the milky eyes of the beggar sitting by the side of the road, or the round black eyes of sparrows sitting in their cages at the market. If he had been moving more quickly, even to reach more people, these things might have become a blur to him. Because he was moving slowly, they came into focus for him, just as he came into focus for them. And our story today is really a perfect example of that. As Jesus walks from the at the encouragement of this servant who comes and says that his master's daughter is dying, and the ways that he encounters this woman on the path. Paul Miller wrote a book which the title itself is worth contemplation, but it's called Love Walked Among Us. And one of the things that he points out in this book is that as Jesus loves people, and that's what he's really trying to get us to do, is to kind of look at the mechanics of how Jesus loved people. And he notes that at the beginning of so many stories, and even at the beginning of parables that Jesus tells, seeing people is comes first. If you think of the story of the prodigal son, we know the son goes off and squanders his inheritance, and then he comes back. And what does the father do? It says, from a long way off, he saw his son coming up the road. Or the Good Samaritan. Right, the man has been beaten and robbed on the side of the road, and the priest and the Levite right walk by, and I imagine that they pretty much avoid eye contact as much as possible, but it says the Good Samaritan looked and saw this man on the side of the road, came into clear focus for him, and allows him to have compassion and to love him. And in our story today, Jesus, again, is walking, and he hears this news, and he says, let's go. And as he's going, this woman touches his garment and is healed. And it said Jesus felt the power go out from him. And what's interesting about this is that he doesn't just move on. Like, you know, he could have said, all right, I healed someone, great, but I have another thing I'm working on. I got to get there, right? But that's not what Jesus did, is it? Immediately aware that power had gone forth from him, Jesus turned about in the crowd. He's looking and said, who touched my clothes? And the disciples said to him, you see the crowd is pressing in on you. How can you say who touched me, right? They just see kind of the blur of the crowd all pressing in. But he looked all around to see who had done it. And it's then that the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling, fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, after he sees her, he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease. Jesus wanted to see this woman. This is important. And even though she'd already been healed, he says to her, only after he sees her, go in peace and be healed. Right? There's something about Jesus's ministry that we see here that it's not just about doing the most good for as many people as he possibly can. It's important to him that he sees people, that he moves at this walking pace. Now in this time, it says, while he was still speaking, some people came from the leader's house to say, your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further? And I think there's this sense from the people, and maybe even Jesus' disciples, that Jesus has kind of blown it here. He had a chance, if he had hurried, if he had just kind of gone as fast as he could and let everyone else be a blur and gone as fast as he could, that he could have saved this girl's life. But he has missed his chance because he was moving too slowly. But instead, he says, do not fear, only believe. And he goes on and it says, when they came to the house of the leader of the synagogue, he saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. He doesn't just rush by even then. He stops and he takes stock of the situation before he moves in, before he does this amazing thing. We have this ethic called utilitarianism. And the question of utilitarianism is, how can we accomplish more? And this was always Jesus's temptation too. We see it in the wilderness. We see it in a story like this. People expecting Jesus to just do as much as he possibly can. But that's not Jesus's ministry. You see, God could have just found another way to heal people. Jesus could have just found a way of blessing the dirt and going around and just throwing it at people and saying, be healed as you touch this dirt. Or he could have lined people up, you know, like a team coming out before a game, lined people up side to side and gone down the aisle and given high fives. And as he went, he could have just healed everyone who stuck their hand out. But he didn't do that. There is something important about the gospel that we learn from the fact that Jesus walked. He didn't teleport himself. He didn't do any of these more efficient things. Jesus did ministry at a pace where he could connect. Again, Barbara Brown Taylor writes, while many of his present-day admirers, like us, pay close attention to what he said and did. They pay less attention to the pace at which he did it. Jesus was a walker, not a rider. He took his sweet time. And those of us who wish to follow him more nearly might decide to take more of theirs, too. It's important for us to remember that Jesus' disciples didn't just read his teaching. Jesus spent time with them. They saw his life, not just what he said and did. They lived at his pace during the time that he discipled them. We must remember what they learned from that, that it is not up to me and to you to fix all of the problems of the world. Jesus didn't even fix all of the problems of the world in the time that he was here. Our work is to connect with God and with others, and to live at a pace where we are able to do that. And then we can move outward. We can broaden our ministry, but only at a pace where we are able to connect, only by walking the earth. It's no coincidence that so many places in the scriptures use the image of walking as a metaphor for the journey of faith. The prophet says, "What does the Lord require of you but to do justice?" Great. How many things can we do to do justice? There's infinite things, infinite problems of the world, injustices that need to be fixed. Great. Love kindness or love mercy. Oh, there's so many acts of kindness that we could do. We could spend our whole days doing just acts of kindness everywhere. But then he says this, walk humbly with your God. Walk humbly with your God. So whatever it is, whatever the justice that we're supposed to do is, whatever the mercy that we're supposed to do, the acts of kindness that we're supposed to do, it must be done at the pace of walking humbly with our God. Now Jesus, of course, and the people, the writers of the scriptures, the prophets, they didn't have planes and cars and trains. But at least they could have talked about galloping or sprinting with God. But they didn't. They talk about walking with God. Now there's a difference in the Olympics. There are different sports, right? There's running. And a lot of times in the Summer Olympics, we watch the races, the 100-meter dash, the 200-meter dash. But the sport that gets less viewers is the Olympic sport of speed walking. Have any of you watched speed walking? You really should. It is extremely entertaining. And do you know what the difference in the rules are between the marathon or the sprinting and the walking? The difference is that in speed walking, you must always have one foot touching the ground. And I think there's something about that leads us to the theology, the theological truth of the incarnation, that God became human. Jesus is grounded. When Jesus was baptized, he was baptized into the Jordan River. He was baptized into a place. Jesus could feel his feet on the ground. He could sense his connection to the creation. And this allowed him to be connected with other people. And so our practices for this week are to walk the earth. And I want to give you two ways of doing that. The first is very literal, and that is to walk barefoot. Walking barefoot allows us to be grounded in the creation. It allows us to experience the incarnation ourselves. I actually did this week. On Wednesday morning, I was sitting on the porch, and I looked out, and it was just a beautiful morning. And I said, you know what? I'm talking about walking the earth. I'm going to do it. And so I went in the backyard, and I walked around the backyard. And I'm going to be honest with you, it wasn't always pleasant, because with every step, I felt the crunch of mayflies beneath my feet. And sometimes they would, you know, I would step, and they would fly up, right? But here's the thing. I also really felt the ground under my feet. I felt the wetness of the dew. I saw the little droplets of dew on leaves and flowers. I felt what it is to be connected with the whole creation, including the mayflies. It's something we don't always do, is to feel our humanness, or feel our connection to the earth. Another way you could do this, if you want to make it a little more spiritual, in certain places there are what's called labyrinths, prayer labyrinths specifically. And actually, if you look on your 3G plan there, you can Google Toledo, Ohio labyrinth. I have a list for you in the back of the sanctuary as well for different labyrinths in the Toledo area. Go try those. I've never done one myself, really. But you can go and take off your shoes or not. But the point of a labyrinth is that you don't really go anywhere. You know, you're not hiking to find a better view or anything like that. You're just moving in connection with the earth and letting God be there in your walking, in your moving. So the first practice is to walk barefoot, whether it's just around the creation, a park, your backyard, whatever, or in a labyrinth, to just walk the earth. The second practice is to more metaphorically, you know, walk, but slow down your pace of life. Slow down your pace of life. Live at a walking pace. You might walk around your neighborhood. You know, say no to something else. We're going to talk about saying no in a few weeks, but say no to something. Take something out so you can walk around the neighborhood and greet your neighbors. Change your schedule around. Go at someone else's pace. There are times where I'm in the grocery store and I'm in a hurry. I'm always in a hurry, right? Especially at the grocery store. And I get to check out and I get my stuff in the bag and I'm like running out to my car. And every so often, I come up behind someone who is moving more slowly. Maybe they're in one of the wheelchairs or one of the automatic, you know, chairs, shopping carts that are there. Or maybe they're just moving at a slower pace and I'll come up behind them and they'll turn around and they'll notice me and they'll say, "Oh, I'm so sorry." And whenever they do that, it just makes me stop. Because I'm like, why are they apologizing? Right? They have nothing to apologize for. Just because I'm an anxious wreck and in a hurry, that's not their fault. Right? They don't have to accommodate my pace. And a lot of times what I'll do is I'll say, "No, thanks for slowing me down." And I'll just wait for them. I'll go at their pace for a little bit. And in that moment, I get to connect with them. I get to connect with something that is a pace that is a little more human than the pace that we often live at. And so these practices are meant then to counter the lie that most of us believe, that our goal is to be more efficient. That our goal is to be more efficient. That's a lie. Now, there are times when speed and efficiency are good and appropriate. There are things that we want to do quicker and get over with. But efficiency is a tool. It is not a goal. Increasing our efficiency in certain things should leave us more space for what really matters. But if everything in our lives is efficient, we are not living out our God-created, Jesus-modeled humanity. We are not made to be efficient. We are made to connect. That is the truth. And connection can only happen at a certain pace. Walking is a pace which befits humanity because it is a pace at which we can connect. It is the pace at which Jesus moved. So friends, let us walk humbly with our God. Amen.